excommunication.
This is Infants on Thrones. The philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the core.
It's not over at all. We're just trying to smile. I know perfectly well.
Welcome back to Infants on Thrones. Now, today is June 12th, 2014, and yesterday our Facebook threads went crazy with news that some notable names in the fringy Mormon internet world were being summoned for excommunication. Jonda Lynn from Mormon Stories, Kate Kelly from Ordained Women, even Rock Waterman from Pure Mormonism. Now, a lot of people are really upset by this. And here at Infants on Thrones, you know what really upsets us the most?
It's not more than coincidental. That says that something else is going on.
I got to tell you, I did go out and check my mailbox when I heard about all this and was really disappointed that I didn't have anything. All right, so just a quick disclaimer up front. We have no inside information on this. We don't have John or Kate or Rock on to talk about anything that's going on in their world. But we do have a mostly full quorum of infants, minus our beloved angry swearing atheist Randy. So what you're going to hear is our discussion about excommunication. What does it mean in general? What does this particular case mean? And is there any possible way that we could be next? Pretty please? With sugar on top?
Excommunication.
All right, go for it.
Somebody open their mouth, so leave.
So there's this dude, his name is Jonda Lynn, and apparently he's getting summoned. Just the phrase summoned is like you're going to a throne room, like it's Game of Thrones or something, but it's not nearly as epic as it sounds.
Well, let's not forget the women that were involved as well. There's a woman that's involved just as much.
And Matt, did you say that Rock Waterman got a letter?
Yeah,
that's what I understand. It was going around the boards that within the month, Rock Waterman, who has a pretty popular blog, Pure Mormonism, was also summoned. So the timing of it's really, I'm going to say it's not more than coincidental.
I gotta tell you,
something else is going on.
I did go out and check my mailbox when I heard about all this, and was really disappointed that I didn't have anything.
I think we should make a roll call. Who's been summoned? I've been summoned.
Right.
Sure, you have. You have to care to be summoned. You have to like actually believe and want to have it both ways. Then you're summoned. But if you just don't give a flying fuck like us, then nobody cares.
No, I think right. As the winners of the 2012 Brody Award, we're too big to touch. They wouldn't dare.
But I got to tell you, Glenn, I thought the same thing went through my mind once I hit those three. I was like, why not us as much as anyone if they're just cleaning house? There's enough of us that are at least still in the club that...
Yeah, my name's still on the records of the church, right? And I care. Yeah. I care so deeply. I really... I want to go back to church, and I want to also have women there, and please, somebody, stop me.
Wouldn't it be kind of fun, though, to stand in front of... Like to just go through that court process, like the church court thing? And,
yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Like, I'd be so fascinated, like, what questions they would ask, and how... solemn an assembly it would be, I don't know.
How big of a smartass you could be?
I wouldn't be a smart. Glenn. I wouldn't be a smartass.
Glenn wouldn't be a smartass. He's above that.
Thanks,
he's above
Jake.
It.
Thanks. Yeah, see, Jake gets it. Jake gets it.
Well, I would want to answer every question with a question. Right.
I just want to answer every question with an answer.
No. It's are you recording this? Why would you think why would you want to think that I'd record this? Number one, and number two, why wouldn't you want this recorded? What are you afraid of? So then
Is
you start having this dialogue.
Okay. So who knows the most about the excommunication process? Because I don't know anything about it, and I would love to get like kind of a step by step of like how it actually goes down.
I've been in a disciplinary hearing on the High Council side.
Ooh.
Ooh. Well, that's right. You're a high priest.
That's right. Know your place, Matt.
Place, Matt.
Hey. Matt. So Tom has the biggest penis.
That's right.
His priesthood's huge.
Right. Right. Well, so endowed.
He's
endowed with power from down low.
Apparently, they're both being charged with apostasy. I mean, it's not like they're being, you know, accused of some other thing. It's actually apostasy. And I went and looked it up in the Church Handbook of Instructions. They have four different criteria, any one of which could trigger the charge of apostasy.
Mm-hmm.
Should we go through them?
Yeah. Let's hear it.
So, number one, repeatedly act in clear, open, and deliberate public opposition to the church or its leaders.
Okay, that's us.
Guilty.
I think that's the only one that applies to either of these people.
Sounds pretty broad, though.
I agree. It's the only one that could possibly apply. Number two, persist in teaching as church doctrine information that is not church doctrine after they have been corrected by their bishop or a higher authority.
No, that one's going to apply to Kate Kelly.
Really?
How do you figure?
Because I think some of the things that they talk about is women do already have the priesthood. We already have the authority, so we want you to acknowledge what we have anyway.
But she wasn't teaching. Yeah, but she wasn't teaching false doctrine. She was just asking them to reconsider or pray about it, right? I don't know.
I guess it's the question is, can that be tied directly to her or not?
Yeah.
But you know, there are certainly other people in the movement who have kind of pushed that issue where they might be able to wrap their arms around that one. Here's the other thing. That begs the question: what's church doctrine?
Right. How would you know what church doctrine is? And right. And how many, you know, in reading that one, it makes me think about how many changes that there have been in what church doctrine has been. And at any given point, there were people who were persisting in teaching as church doctrine things that were not church doctrine at the time that then became it later on. Like the whole Adam-God doctrine, there would have been a huge section of the church that was confused about that.
But isn't the key part of that point, Scott, that the bishop has already corrected them on it, so it would be something that it had already been brought to the attention. I love that whole idea of correction, that they're going to straighten them out and here's what's but I think that's the key part there.
Because your bishop, who's a dentist, he really knows his stuff.
Well,
church doctrine.
Didn't Kate Kelly get a cease and desist letter from her bishop or stake president, or that she had to shut down ordained women? She had to shut down the website, and she could think whatever she wanted as long as she kept her ideas in her pretty little head.
Yeah.
That's a good question. Did she? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. It was in the New York Times article.
Oh, okay.
And so would that fall under that secondary criteria that she was corrected by her ecclesiastical leader?
She was promoting it
as doctrine. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think that's what they're setting her up for there. Okay, number three, continue to follow the teachings of apostate sects, such as those that advocate plural marriage, after being corrected by their bishop or a higher authority.
That's random. Not applicable.
Yeah, that's for
splinters and stuff, yeah.
Right. Number four, formally join another church and advocate its teachings. So.
It doesn't seem to apply.
I did think it was interesting, though, on that point, because someone could declare themselves as an atheist, and that's not joining another church, but that would probably be, you know, violating rule number one, repeatedly act in a clear, open, and deliberate public opposition to the church or its leaders, but maybe not.
You're saying anyone in particular, or just?
I'm saying rule number four says it's a violation, that it is apostasy to formally join another church, but to formally declare yourself as an atheist isn't specifically listed as one of the violations.
But they could probably find a way to, bring it into that.
Oh, I'm sure that they have. I mean, well, what's the recourse? I mean, they could probably excommunicate you for apostasy for doing lots of things that aren't on this list and just call it that. And what are you going to do about it?
Well, see, this is where it gets weird is because, they could hold a disciplinary council for someone with facial hair. You know, they made the rules. I'm just using that as a stupid example. I'm just saying that if they make the rules and there's no checks and balances in a disciplinary hearing – that the state president has a lot of discretion, you know, at his disposal. So if he feels like that the facial hair
should shut up facial hair.
Why are we picking that example?
Then you choose one. I'm trying to think of something so absurd. You know, like wearing a blue dress shirt instead of a white shirt. Something so absurd that if they wanted to use that as a form of discipline for someone, I think they could. I'm just saying that if they wanted to get nitpicky about something, and if they
but they don't they this is a long time coming. I'm surprised it didn't happen earlier, to be honest. I mean, the September 6th is kind of the most notable story of this magnitude of a coordinated effort / not coordinated, because the church will not confirm or deny it, but it's very coincidental. And this is like round two, 15 years later or 20 years later, however long it's been. Yeah, it's been like 20 years. And it makes me wonder if patience just ran out, or if we just had a dry spell of, you know, apostates purging, not wanting to speak up or what. Yeah, but
enough noise has been created for the higher-ups to finally say enough, and then they sent down the word. Because I mean, Dylan's been asked this question for years, as long as I've been associated with the ex-Mormon community. You know, how come you haven't been disciplined or hauled in with the stake president? So, I mean, I know he's been filled in that question since I've known him.
Yeah, and he's been bouncing back and forth on it. Like, oh, yeah, it seems like he's done several episodes where it's a conversation of how a bishop or a stake president had to talk to him and say, hey, you know, you're on the edge a little bit, but it's no big deal. I'm cool like you, but I'm just telling you to help you and hook you up. Like, it seems like, you know, there have been like a couple of false positives, and then finally somebody pulled the trigger, because you only can get so lucky and have so many like cool hip bishops and stake presidents before you get, you know, the more classical ones, I guess.
Well, here's what seems strange to me, and I don't know, Scott, if you made it through your list or not, but
yeah, that was it.
Okay, but
the only let me just add this.
Yeah,
if I can.
Uh-huh.
The next sentence after number four says priesthood leaders must take disciplinary action against apostates to protect church members.
Yeah,
well, protect.
And,
yeah,
and there's that language in that. I kind of want to read. I'd have to pull it up, but that link that you sent to us that was the church news.
Yeah, I've got it here.
Thing. Yeah,
I got
yeah.
It up. Yeah, I got yeah. It up. Here's what it
yeah,
says.
Just...
The church issued the following statement today in response to questions from the news media regarding church discipline. The church is a family made up of millions of individuals with diverse backgrounds and opinions. There is room for questions, and we welcome sincere conversations. We hope those seeking answers will find them in happiness throughout the gospel of Jesus Christ. Sometimes members' plural possessive actions contradict church doctrine and lead others astray. While uncommon, some members in effect choose to take themselves out of the church by actively teaching and publicly attempting to change doctrine to comply with their personal beliefs.
Why would they choose that, Matt? Why?
It's why? It's all about choices.
Mm-hmm.
This saddens leaders and fellow members. In these rare cases, local leaders have the responsibility to clarify false teachings and prevent other members from being misled. Decisions are made by local leaders and not directed or coordinated by church headquarters.
Or coordinated!
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, so that was like Kate Kelly's in D.C., right? And DeLynn's in Utah. I mean, and this just happens in the same... Just it must be the spirit.
Right.
That's just a bald-faced lie. Like, that's the thing that's so bizarre. It's like, why do they have to be so apologetic or, like, so cloak and dagger about the fact that they're kicking people out of their own organization,
well,
you know?
Maybe their stake presidents were, like, talking to each other and saying, what can we do with these people that are destroying the flock?
So like, they both felt the same disturbance in the force.
Right?
I felt a great disturbance in the force, as if millions of voices suddenly cried out in terror and were suddenly silenced.
Yeah. No, that's BS. And it said it in the Deseret News article too. It's from the same quote, but it says the same thing, that, hey, this is they're trying to get way ahead of that, saying that this is all from local leaders and that it's the local leaders that have the responsibility to do this. But the man, this church, this newsroom article is just dripping with contempt and emotional manipulation. And
oh, it saddens me to hear you criticize it.
Right. We're a family.
We're a family. We are a family, like a giant tree,
branching out toward the sky. Sincere conversations are welcome.
Yeah.
Subtext, this is very insincere of you.
Yeah, that's a no true Scotsman fallacy there. We welcome sincere conversations, so all the ones that we don't welcome must not be sincere. Like, do they really think that John DeLynn and Kate Kelly are insincere? I mean, you could say a lot of things, but you can't accuse either of those people of being insincere.
Right.
Again, I come back to what's doctrine. You guys keep saying as if it's a definable, knowable thing that they teach or attempt to change doctrine to comply with their personal beliefs.
Well, in Kate Kelly's case, it's really easy. It's the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is it in DeLynn's case?
His advocacy of accepting gays would be the closest thing I can think
of. Well, that was listed in the New York Times, as well as him openly posting on his Facebook that he doesn't believe in certain fundamental beliefs or teachings in the church.
Yeah, he had a quote that the truth claims of the church, that basically he didn't believe in the major truth claims of the church anymore.
Yeah.
But is it... But he's very careful. Every time he talks about that, he's talking about his own beliefs. He's not telling other people what they should or shouldn't believe. He's not preaching anything as gospel or doctrine.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah, because he was pretty influential back in the day. I mean, I don't mind admitting. He had his infamous first round of where am I at, what do I believe, that then he had to infamously pull down and then put back up. I mean, he's gone through the motions of playing both sides several times, so I don't know. Like, I'm not really thinking of the church as acting, you know, out of the blue on this one. It's kind of been a long time coming, in my opinion. I not that I'm siding or thinking it's a good idea or I have anything against DeLynn, but like, if the church doesn't respond in some way to either of these cases, when should they? Like, what's the level of, are we looking for, like, you know, mass murderers only, or like, where's the line? Because they need to protect their own little image, and these voices are getting heard and getting a lot of buzz, and as long as they're still associated with the church, it's a PR nightmare. And so saying that they're no longer associated with the church just kind of clarifies things and makes it easier from a business perspective, anyway.
So say that again. What do you think the church's motivation is behind this?
To protect their image, and as much as the church wants to be inclusive, they also don't want to lose control of very key, fundamental, doctrinal, hot topics that are not should they do not want to see being portrayed as ground up sort of progressive change that has to be top down, inspirational from God directly to the 12 apostles, you know, unanimous sort of thing. The old white dudes have to all agree, and it has nothing to do with the peasants and the pitchforks. And John DeLynn and the ordained women movement, that's like peasants and pitchforks. And as long as they have the credibility and the clout of saying that we're active Mormons, part of the same family, it just is a nightmare that the church can't deal with in the long term. And I guess maybe it's an unpopular way of looking at it, but I'm not that surprised that it's finally happened.
But what do you think that the strategic value is of doing both of them at once? Like, well, to me, just I don't really understand that.
Well, I think that the motivation is directing a message to members of the church saying,
exactly,
look, you know, if you or any of your friends are associating with these people, this is what we're talking about in the temple interview when we ask you if you associate with apostate groups or whatever that question is in the temple question. I think they're trying to make it very clear, demarcation, this isn't acceptable. And so we're going to put the stigma very clear on these outliers, DeLynn, ordained women, pure Mormonism. I think it's all for the members. so that, that they'll kind of retrench a little bit.
But I also think the timing of it is just a kind of ripping off the Band-Aid thing. Because if they did DeLynn now, and then they did Kate Kelly 3 months from now,
yeah, right.
They did prolong it. Yeah.
Well, I think it's a stronger statement. It's a stronger statement when they do it at once. Yeah,
it's a stronger statement, and it consolidates the bad PR into one event.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if they just lie about it, it's something they can deny, and it's not coordinated at all, and people are like, bullshit, and then those same people talk about it once and once only, and then it dies down, and it's like, okay, we only had to deal with that hiccup, blemish, you know, one time, and all it took was a lie. We've done that before. No problem.
This is really, 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 really important to less than 1,000 people. And that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
No. And there's more than 1,000.
I'll give it 5,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's definitely calculated to sacrifice. They know this is going to have an effect. They will have resignations. They will reduce certain people's tithing. It's to insulate the 5 million. Versus the 5,000.
Yep, exactly.
That they don't care about anyway. That are contributing less. That aren't, that are kind of the cafeteria Mormons anyway. So if they can marginalize John Kelly, and this is where I think we come into play, and other people who block, Waterman, anybody who's critical of the church who still has some standing, is at risk because they want to marginalize or treat everybody who's critical as a dissident, an apostate. An outsider, and so that will limit their influence.
Do you think it's an attack on liberal Mormons? I mean, you know, we got a lot of shit in December for our damn liberals, episode. But isn't this the church kind of going after what we talked about?
I'm surprised Joanna Brooks isn't on the table.
Yeah.
I think Joanna Brooks. Yeah, no, Joanna Brooks toes the line a little.
She went on the Daily Show though. As a Mormon, and if Bob's right, then that can't happen. She can't be portrayed as a Mormon to the whole world, according to Bob.
The difference with Joanna Brooks is that she is self-promotional enough to know where to draw the line, so that she wouldn't ruffle too many feathers.
Yeah, she's put a toe in the water, but she hasn't, jumped in and gone for a swim. Like, what has she done wrong by comparison to these? Because, Rock Waterman, bless his soul, has some crazy ideas of where the church
should be.
What
Mormonism is, yeah.
Yeah, what Mormonism is, and it's like old school, let's forget that correlation happened. And then you've got DeLynn, who's like, I'm borderline an atheist. Just kidding, I'm not. Oh, I am. I'm not. I don't know what I believe, but it's very hairy and ambiguous, and it's definitely not what the church wants me to. And then Ordained Women is just blatantly like, hey, this is something that the church is like fundamentally based upon. Men get the priesthood, and I want to have that changed. And then Joanna Brooks, I can't point to anything other than like, hey, I'm Joanna Brooks, I wrote a book, PR, yay. Like, what has she done wrong, just other than,
I thought of another DeLynn one, though. His claims on the Book of Mormon as not being historic. That's pretty strong.
Yeah, it is.
That's pretty strong.
Yeah, yeah, that is pretty big.
Would that be, like, non-doctrinal? The Book of Mormon's not what it claims to be?
I think there's been plenty of episodes that he's done that would qualify.
Yeah, right.
So Matt, to get back to your point, are you calling out the church then to step up to the plate and call us out?
Yeah, I say bring it.
So we're issuing the challenge right here then.
Oh jeez.
So whoever's listening,
that's me, Jesse Smith. Come find me.
Go get Jesse Smith.
Nope, this is Scott Rowley speaking.
Yeah. Oh man,
hey, we've got to be sincere.
Gotta be sincere.
We've got to. Or wait, no. We gotta be.
We've got to care.
Sincere.
You gotta be sincere.
Gotta care, but.
You gotta feel it here.
In a way that makes it seem like we don't care, so the church.
'Cause if you feel it here, well then you're gonna be.
I'm confused.
Yeah, I'm asking questions, but they're not sincere questions.
Right.
Apparently.
If you're really sincere, if you're really sincere,
If you feel it in here, and it's gotta be right off, baby.
You know, and that's one I thought, wow, we don't have enough influence for them to care about us, but I am confident that they know that we exist. And that they have a dossier on each one of us somewhere.
But they don't ever plan to do anything with it. Like, why keep that?
What are you laughing at, Glenn? You don't believe? You think that's just?
It's just funny. I don't know. It's funny to me.
You don't think it's true?
There's a dossier on each.
You don't think there's a Brother Jake wanted poster somewhere at 50 East Temple?
This guy's got like a cord. He's got like the string, the yarn, and all the thumbtacks, and he's trying to draw it all in.
Yeah, Brother Jake's under the radar because they all think that that's serious.
Yeah,
they're all like, we got to get him. We got to get him his own I Am a Mormon account.
that's like Zwick sending the fake Archuleta an email,
right.
telling him how great he is.
Yeah.
So, according to a Reddit post from Waterman, have you guys seen this? How I just heard, I can confirm that this purge is coming from the top leadership because my bishop delivered the ultimatum to me, which he said came from an Area 70. Ooh, a 70. I have not mentioned it until now because I have not yet heard from my stake president. Like John, I have never met my stake president either. I was given the option to stop blogging or resign, otherwise face excommunication.
Okay, this is pretty funny. I posted somewhere that I was a little disappointed that the infants weren't on the list.
Yeah.
And someone, and Andrew posted, well, yours is a philosophy podcast, not yours is a philosophy podcast.
We got to switch rather than a category.
Rather than a Christianity one. So you guys are in the clear.
We're okay.
Cheers, Andrew. That was good.
Well, the closing statement of this Reddit post is that this is a significant coordinated effort from the very top. It just shook three very sizable hornet's nests, Mormon stories between women and pure Mormonism. Done.
Yeah, 5,000 people.
Yeah.
They're the same group of like...
But what it really kind of focused on, and I don't know if there's more to talk about on this story, I was thinking more of a global issue of just the idea of church discipline and excommunication generally. The fact that there is a summons, there is a court to get people in line. I used to joke about, my bishop asked me when I was kind of going through my faith crisis, well, what calling would you have? And I said, you know, I'd be on the high council. And he says, really? Why would you be on the high council? I said, easy. I said, I don't mind speaking. I'll speak once a month and then vote no in church discipline councils. And I said, there's one question you asked. Do you still want to be Mormon? And if the answer is yes, then no, you're not getting disciplined. You're not getting excommunicated. But yet, so just the idea that they have this mechanism and that they want to excommunicate people for not towing the line seems really, really weird to me now. I guess as I'm thinking about it now.
See, I think I guess I can sympathize to some extent with it. I mean, they have every right to control who their members are. It's a private organization. It's up to them. If they want to kick somebody out, they can kick somebody out for whatever reason they want.
In most cases, isn't it truly a court of love where they really believe that there's eternal consequences of somebody continuing to take the sacrament with sin, that this is their damnation? And so what they have to do, they have to go through a repentance process where you got a clean slate, come back in, get rebaptized, recommitted, all of this thing. And so this is, you know, like the olive branch analogies from Book of Mormon or whatever. You're cutting off the bad branch and you're transplant. I mean, I think that people that are on these high councils have that genuine sense that they're doing good in these cases.
In the parable of the 90 and 9, Jesus put the sheep out there in the first place. And then you just went and gathered it up later? Like, is it?
No, but I think they would see, Jake, that this is them reaching out to that one lost sheep and cutting them from the briars.
You're so nice, Glenn. You're still so nice. I love it.
No, you're right.
I know people who are like this, and they're kind-hearted. They're just they don't see it.
And you're saying most of the time. Well, most of the time,
yeah,
these excommunications happen because somebody's slept with somebody else, or this isn't, you know, the apostasy is not most of the time.
Right.
This is probably less than 5% of what they see.
Yeah, less than that, yeah.
You know what I think is the perfect metaphor is the latest Game of Thrones season where Tyrion is on trial.
Oh, trial.
Are you going to give spoilers?
Trial by combat?
It's not a spoiler. It's just, you know, his own father is part of the council. You know, back to the whole family. Like, we're one big family, but you know what's more important than family? The family name and the image and all this other stuff. So we're going to do a fake trial and we're going to trot out all these things. There's going to be a large panel of people who are all against you. You have nobody on your side. I mean, think about it. That's what happens in these courts of love. It's not like it's an equal footing where both sides are represented equally and somebody, you know, looks at it. Matt, you're the lawyer here. And Scott, I mean, is this anything like a real trial, but yet we use kind of this legal language? So to me, it's like Game of Thrones, Mormon version.
Well, my understanding is you are assigned like an advocate or somebody who's kind of on your side. You can call a witness. You can call a couple witnesses, and it is somewhat of a fact-finding. But my understanding is the real fact-finding is how contrite you are. It's a given that you've done this, right?
Right. It's like at what point are you going to
–
And just like in Game of Thrones, at what point are you going to confess? And like the ultimate outcome is like you have to go with your tail between your legs. And
it's so not like Game of Thrones because they're not conniving and having people lie and promising them that they'll marry this noble person if they tell this stuff. I mean, it's not that conniving and one-sided.
Okay, so it's not that conniving. The part that's the same as Game of Thrones is that it's just a surface-level bullshit thing that's a process that doesn't need to exist because it's a foregone conclusion. That's all I was trying to say.
I don't think it's a foregone conclusion because...
Yes, it is.
Okay, Tom, talk about your experience when you sat on these things.
Yeah, well, Tom, tell us how many times you walk out of a court of love and no disciplinary action takes place and somebody walks scot-free and that's the end of it and there's no disfellowship.
Turns out this was all wrong. falsely accused.
Well, but there's different levels of discipline that you can have. It's not like every time they're going to be excommunicated. Right. And yeah, I think that's where the level of contrition and all these things go into play.
I don't think
it's a farce. I think that they really care about. I think they take it very seriously.
We don't have the percentage, but I would bet you it's less than like 10% of cases that somebody walks away without being either excommunicated or disfellowshipped. So it's just a matter of degree. Once you're summoned, it's how bad is it? It's not let's make sure we're not wrong.
But like in Game of Thrones, Cersei wanted Tyrion dead. Nobody in a Council of Love really wants that.
They want you dead in terms of PR image and what you represent. I mean,
well, but Glenn, what if there's a moon door?
Then they make them fly.
You guys are so soft. You don't want to deal with my analogy of like incestuous families killing each other. Okay, it's a little extreme.
Nobody
like
my facial hair analogies, Bob. Get on board.
Tom, tell us
tales from the high priest's office.
Yeah.
Everybody gather around the campfire here.
How many throats were slit? Right.
Well, it's sort of like what Matt was saying. They don't.
How many whores testified?
Well, it depends on how many whores were involved. Yeah.
It's determined on a case by case basis.
It's not that you're issued an advocate per se. Since there's 12 members of the High Council for every stake, they split them up. So 6-4, 6 against. And then the stake presidency, the stake president is the ultimate judge. His counselors are essentially.
You said 6-4, 6 against.
Right.
So they split up the advocacy early.
It's like shirts and skins.
Yeah, right.
Just like shirts and skins. So
what does that mean to say you arbitrarily assigned 6 people to be on this?
So 6 are like are on the prosecution side. 6 are on the defense side.
What it's like is going to the prosecutor's office and saying, I need 12 of you.
12 prosecutors.
6 of you. 12 prosecutors. 6 of you are going to be assigned to defend him.
Yeah.
Don't overthink this too much.
And does this happen just like the day of? They're just like, okay, you guys are 4. Like, do they have time to like prepare their case?
No. So what? In the situations that I'm familiar with is what happens. You get in because you're not even told like who it is. Like because I got called to a disciplinary council.
Why would that matter? To know the facts in advance and the names of that's
because it reduces gossip, man. I don't know if you've been around Mormon culture at all, but
okay. Let me jump in real quick. I do know that I have some people who are law enforcement that are on high councils, and in Arizona, law enforcement officers are mandatory reporters, and that's not. That obligation doesn't necessarily stop because they're on a high council. At least some law enforcement don't view that. So law enforcement will be excluded from instances where it's child abuse or sex abuse because the state president knows that law enforcement officer will report. And so I know people who have been told we're having a high council, you're not supposed to come. And so now he knows what it is. And I've heard stories about guys who have shown up to see who walks in there and then call and report.
Oh my gosh.
That's a shitty thing that the state president's doing right there.
So I don't know why. So the point is they don't know who it is, but in some cases they might know the subject matter.
Well, because if you look at it this way, it's this when it gets to a stake level, because there are disciplinary hearings that happen on the bishop and ward level.
Oh,
those are fairly informal. Sometimes it can involve disfellowshipment and other forms of informal discipline and whatever.
Yeah, because the bishop has the authority to tell somebody you're not going to take the sacrament and not,
right.
Give me your temple recommend for the next 6 months.
Well, right. And the bishop can even like issue other forms of discipline, like you got to wash the windows of the chapel for 6 months or something.
Yeah.
Or trim everybody's facial hair.
Or,
yeah. No. Right.
What happens when somebody's summoned and they just don't show up? I mean, do they still divide up six on six, and then the six that are four, they like advocate for them in absentia?
Yeah. So
the trial takes place whether or not the person's actually there.
Do they at least put a picture of him on a stool or on a little chair? Right. Burn a candle.
Sock puppet.
For and behalf of sock brother so and so.
Yeah, right. Who is not here?
Yeah, no, but I know people who've been excommunicated in absentia and
absentia, even... Mr. Lawyer.
Absential. Well, I think,
absentia. It's absent.
That's what I said, in absentia.
It's not abstentia.
You're putting a T in it.
Absentia.
You're thinking it's like abstinence.
No, there is a T in it. There is a T in it. Nice try.
Really? No, no, there's not.
In absentia.
T-I-N.
Let's have a disciplary council.
Did I say in abstentia?
Yes.
Okay, that's wrong. It's in absentia. Okay. Sorry.
Anyway.
I'll edit the right one
just
back
edit,
in.
Please edit that out.
If I remember right, and you guys
always show up.
If you guys know the story, but with Mike Quinn, D. Michael Quinn, I believe he didn't show, and they still held his court.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, they do it all the time.
I would imagine that probably happens a large majority of the time where people just don't show
up. That would be the most fun part, though. Why would you not show up, man?
I know. That's my whole thing. It's like,
did Grant Palmer show up when he got – because he only got disfellowshipped.
Yeah, he got disfellowshipped. I believe he did.
But Palmer the one – oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say that's the same thing as, you know, being summoned to live the rest of your days on the wall as part of the Night's Watch. It's like
that's like taking a blast.
No, that's going back on the mission.
Who's the guy here in Arizona, Scott, that recorded his?
Oh, you're thinking of Lyndon Lamborn.
Yeah. Lyndon Lamborn, yeah, and that's online somewhere.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Listen in. Right.
It's really bad quality.
It is bad quality. Right.
There's also who's the guy that just got – this was like 6 or 8 months ago.
Oh, the Denver Snuffer.
Yeah, Denver Snuffer. He wanted to bring his family into it.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let him in, and there was like this battle to see if he could get his family in or not. And then they finally decided to just leave because they wouldn't let him take his family into the church court.
Yeah, so he didn't.
So
get it.
His was in absentia too. Get it? Did you hear that?
That was on purpose. That one was on purpose.
That was good. Yeah, I accept that.
It won't make any sense. The other one edited out, but that's okay.
But I want to go back to Glenn's earlier point, how serious and how somber these things are, because they are. I mean, a normal court hearing, what, you're standing in front of a judge, maybe a jury, some bullshit lawyers.
This is way more serious than that. It makes way more sense.
Well, because, I mean, if you're a believer, you believe that, yeah, your salvation's on the line, that you're doing this not in front of all these higher ups, these big time priesthood holding people, and they have your salvation in their hands. And I remember the one that I left, and there was about three of us that didn't cry. Everybody else was just I remember my stake president said, this is going to go down as one of the most spiritual moments of my entire life.
Oh gosh.
Just because it's they feel the intensity, like the seriousness of it. Like this is for reals, yo. We don't mess around here. This is in front of God, angels, and these witnesses or whatever. And it feels so serious. I remember because the one I was in lasted 2.5 hours. And I mean, it was nobody wanted to get up and leave. Nobody went up for a potty break. It was like, who's going to take a leak during this? This guy's freaking salvation's on the line. Are you serious?
Tom, did you see the episode of Big Love where Barb was excommunicated?
I did, yes.
And so they didn't have the 12 people. It was just like the stake president and the bishop, I think, were the only two that were in there. But they said this like word for word kind of thing that was like, we hereby strip all of your everything for all eternity. And, you know,
Barbara Dutton Henriksen, henceforth, your name shall be removed from the records of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You will not be allowed to partake of the sacrament. The sacred ordinances that bind you to your family, your ancestors, and your progenitors for all eternity are severed.
And I think I remember hearing at the point that was one of the things that was like a fuck you to the church, that they were revealing the actual wording of an excommunication. But I don't know if that's true.
I'm unfamiliar with that. I don't know if the stake presidents have like a form they got to pull out, and you know, they tearfully pull it out of their binder and they say, okay, here we go, and then they read whatever that is. I haven't heard that, because the one I was involved with was just a reinstatement.
They just had to clean windows.
Yeah, you just had to, right. Yeah. And trim facial hair. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But is that what it's about, Tom? It really is about, let's see how contrite this person is.
Oh, it is. It's that's the shitty part. It's like you have to be a judge of their actions, whether they've I don't know, done enough restitution, shown enough remorse. It's really shitty.
Wait. So when you're summoned, is there like a pamphlet that says, here are some suggestions of things you should do before you come so you have a better chance? Like what do you mean to have to do all this penance or whatever? Like,
well, I thought it's like
determine what you already did bad. There is no like, you know, grace period of you've been summoned, you know, go pay off your debts and then show up and it'll be better for you. Like, is that how it's supposed to work or what?
I don't know about that part, but like in the situations where I can only go off the ones that I was involved in. Like, he came and all the questions were essentially, what have you done since your initial discipline? And he had to essentially show to the court that he'd made progress. He's, you know, he's like, I haven't taken any sacrament. I've been paying my fast offerings regularly. I'm a full tithe payer. And even if he like acts like he's insincere, like if he kind of winked at anybody, like I'm a full tithe payer, get it? then I think that would show some insincerity on his part, and a lot of it, you know, the high council.
That's like that's
so more like a parole board almost.
Yeah, it's like fundamentally different than what I had understood this whole process to be. I thought that
the facts have already been found. They've already made a finding that this is that he is an adulterer, that they are an apostate, that they have done blah 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 blah. That's done. That's not what they're there for.
Well, but look at Lamborn's case. I mean, because they had to go through all the documents where they had to essentially prove that he was being an open apostate and sowing the seeds of doubt to whoever, you know. And I can't remember how many documents they went through and tried to prove that fact. So like in a situation like that, where they're essentially trying to prove that he is an apostate, that would be where it gets a little murky. And I guess that's kind of why I think it would be so awesome to get up there and just watch these guys run in circles trying to prove, you know, whether I'm an apostate or whoever it would be to be an apostate. Because even I think even DeLynn has a hell of a good shot of keeping his membership if he wanted.
You think?
I think.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think if he showed up and said, "Oh, absolutely, I'll stop and I'll toe the line," and I'm so, I agree. But neither of them will. Neither of them can because, they can. I just don't think they will because they truly are authentic and believe this stuff.
Well, but it's the Kate Kelly one that's a mystery to me because I really don't know too much of her background story and her positions and stuff like that. But I'm way more familiar with DeLynn. I really do think that DeLynn could just walk out of there with a disfellowshment. It all depends. It all depends on the stake president. There's so much. I mean, I put this
in this case, if it truly is coordinated, then there may be an edict. I mean, they may not have discretion.
You're absolutely right. He might just be, you know, just running through the motions on this. You're absolutely right.
Mm.
So, well, this is. I mean,
go ahead.
Well, so there's been a long. I mean, I've been wondering for a while if at some point. Is someone laughing? What happened?
Sorry, I was coughing and trying to get.
Oh, okay. All right. I mean, it's
my pod.
No, it's fine. I've been wondering if Mormonism will kind of come to some equilibrium where, you know, kind of like Catholicism has, there are cultural Mormons and then there are believing Mormons, but like everybody kind of still claims to be Mormon. But like this type of thing like makes a very clear demarcation that you cannot. In the eyes of the church, you are not a Mormon if you don't fall in line and like do, you know, with the correlated church. Yeah. Like you
subscribe to Meridian magazine.
Yeah.
Is it bad that I think it's, I mean, I think it's good.
You're happy. No, because it goes back to that damned liberals conversation. Of course you're going to be happy about it. Because you don't want.
Because I
don't
never
want these,
change my mind.
Because you don't want these lazy liberals getting credit for being Mormon when they don't do the work.
No, but they're doing
work.
Did
I really sound like that? Wow, that's great.
But I'm sure that Kate Kelly, you know, is working her ass off and like actually doing things in, you know, in church and doing her visiting teaching or whatever. Like I'm sure she's very sincere.
Pants.
Yeah. Well, the thing that surprises me about her is that just the whole tone that the ordained women struck. You know, they're meeting in their Sunday best. They're having a prayer. They're walking reverently over to the to Temple Square or to the visitor center or the conference center rather, and standing in line and asking for tickets. And really, they're going to excommunicate her over that? I mean.
That's right. There's got to be some statement somewhere that they're pointing to, and the fact that she has, that she's motivated a group to follow suit. That's what I focus on.
Let me read the opening paragraph of this Deseret News article. Okay, the leader. This is how it starts. The leader of the small activist ordained women group that organized protests at the past two priesthood sessions of LDS Church General Conference. Now may face church discipline, she has told the New York Times.
Oh, man.
That's how they introduce her. So right out of the chute, they're just trying to marginalize her as the leader of a small activist group that's protested two times at General Conference, may face discipline, like, oh, we have no idea what's going on, but she told the New York Times she might face discipline, trying to just distance themselves from us so much. It's just, I mean, it's just so disgusting that they're even pretending like they're involved in a dialogue with people.
What's amazing to me, and it's just like with the ordained women thing, and I'm sure you guys think the same thing. It could have been diffused so easily early on from the church's perspective, because they did seem like they were being very respectful. I mean, if they could, I don't know. It's like even just letting them into the back row, like the whole thing. The whole thing would have been so diffused.
Well, why do they care if they're in the meeting anyway?
Yeah, but there's so many things that I'm just like, why is the church doing these episodes of self-sabotage? They're making a situation so much worse, and it's so reflective of this that's happening with Dylan and this Kate Kelly, because now it's drawing so much more negative attention to them, making them look like bullies. And it's another form of self-sabotage.
Tom, here's what happens, Tom. Once you let them in and you let them sit on the back row, then the next time they're going to sit in the middle.
Slippery slope. And then they're going to be in the red chairs. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then
yeah.
They're going to say, can we say the prayer? Why can't we say the prayer? Then can we give a talk? And it's like the camel right. That sticks its nose in the tent and then its yep. head and the whole thing. So, yeah, slippery slope.
Okay, so you guys, let's go around the horn here. This announcement happening, do you think this kind of thing strengthens the church, or do you think this helps the church in terms of its internal structure versus the outside PR negative effects that it's going to have? What do you think is a net benefit or a net negative for the church institutionally?
I think it's dependent on short term versus long term. I think in the short term, it's totally fine. This is just them doubling down on what they've always done, protecting the core, which isn't growing and is, you know, the 5 million ish that's active at best. And from that perspective, this is a great move. It scares people, like my family, who just to be reminded that apostates are dangerous and we take action against them, especially if they consider themselves to be affiliated at all. Nope, there's some bright lines that you can't cross. You can't be on both sides. But in the long run, I mean, the church is dead, obviously. It's like, it's just a matter of time before it implodes. But that's, you know, the long run, 50, 100 plus years. But in the short run, it's totally good for them. It's my two cents.
I think the members of the church, the ones that really believe, I think they celebrate this moment. I was reading, yeah. I think it was the comments in, was it Deseret News, in that terrible article that you quoted from, Scott. There's a lot of comments that said, good for the church, you know, and these guys had it coming and blah, blah, blah. And that's, yep. that's kind of the feeling that I get from the members. It's almost like
strengthen the core.
Yeah, it's the church is doing exactly what I would hope they would do. You know, get rid of the wheat from the what is it?
Tares.
The wheat
tares from tares. The wheat.
And tares, get yeah. the tares out of the wheat.
And from
yeah, that one.
For the Church of Latter-day Saints, you know, the further we get from 2000 and the second coming of Christ, you know it's coming. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming. And the narrative is that in the last days, even the most elect will fall. And you see it. You see Satan is more active, he's more engaging, he's more skilled, he's got more tools with the internet and podcasts and all kinds of things. He's able to deceive people. You're seeing your family and friends falling right and left.
Yeah, did you see what Satan did to Glenn?
Yeah.
Damn.
Exactly. So it supports that narrative. And so I say it's a net positive for the church. I don't know how much I agree with Bob with the long-term, short-term. I don't know that the church is doomed.
See, it's conflicting for me because I think it's a net positive for the church, but there's so many members that are on the fence or on the fringe, and these kinds of moves that the church makes, it's almost like they draw a line in the sand, and a lot of people are going to fall that probably wouldn't have. So that's kind of where I think, you know, if people were kind of like,
but isn't that a good thing for the church then that you strengthen that core and it's more like-minded people?
You cut out people that may have come back. I don't know.
Yeah. I honestly don't think this moves the needle at all. Like, I don't think that it makes the people that were going to stay in would have stayed in whether or not this happened. Sure. The people that were going to leave. Well, maybe they're leaving a tiny bit faster than they would otherwise. But I don't think this bumped us a needle for anybody. Yeah, I don't think it changes anybody's trajectory. It just changes the timeline for some people.
No, you're absolutely right, Jake. I mean, because I reflect back onto my crisis, and I remember when Lyndon Lamborn, because his excommunication came up like right at my peak. And that was very, you know, that was like this very aware moment where I felt threatened, where I'm like, if he can be excommunicated, that means I can be excommunicated. And I kind of retrenched for a while. And I went back to church and put my head down, and I was like,
"Oh, and you stopped doing Mormon Expression then?"
No, that was
okay.
No.
All right. Oh, sorry.
Dick.
Douche. But yeah, that's. I mean, you're right though, Jake. I don't think it moves the needle much, but
doesn't it just reiterate in the aggregate? This is just another move by the church to illustrate that it's doubling down. It's like the innovator's dilemma on steroids. It's like a company that's entrenched and has something that people like because people have liked it before. But as new generations grow up, as the world moves on, you know, old people die off and I don't know, until they change, they're not going to have growth, and it's only going to be internal, like baby producing growth. Missionary program isn't being that effective. It's, you know, people are falling away as fast as they're being converted. So it's just a matter of time before enough generations pass, science takes over. I don't know.
Wow. Okay.
I'm just saying, like, they have a chance of starting to move the needle in the direction of being a healthy community that supports one another, that doesn't take things literally, that even if they believe, I mean, John DeLynn had some good ideas with trying to find this middle way of you know, the church being this community structure that supports and helps one another. But it's just ahead of its time, and I think eventually the church is going to embrace something like that. But you know, it's not facing sudden death right now. It's just doing what works, what's always worked, and it's going to continue doing that until it doesn't work, and that's going to be a few generations from now.
But it's like what you said earlier, though, Bob. I mean, it seems like DeLynn has kind of just been biding his time. Like, this has been a long time coming, and I just envision the church looking at people like DeLynn and Kate Kelly and Waterman or whatever as these viruses that are out there, and they're probably all three of them have probably done more net damage to their core membership than anything positive, probably, or at least that's the way they see it. So they look at it as a virus and want to quarantine it and eventually purge it out.
So yeah, and that's going to only work so many times. I think it's fine for now, but
it won't quarantine it. I mean, like, it won't get John DeLynn to stop doing Mormon Stories.
No, but if it I don't know, it could in direct, like, if it gets in his head. I don't know. I mean, he stopped Mormon Stories early on because of
but he didn't pull down every single episode that he's ever put up. Those things are up there and they're going to exist. And so you'll have people who are searching the internet, they'll come across it, they'll find it, they'll go on the same journey that we all went on. So the church can't quarantine it.
No, the church can't, but if they can reduce the amount of fallout from here on in, you know, starting from this point on.
Well, I don't know. I mean, in my case, I really didn't feel like it was the tone of the stuff that was done on Mormon Stories that allowed me to do it. I mean, the fact that I would listen to Mormon Stories, like, I was already at a point that I was willing to go outside of the core. When I was willing to go outside of the correlated materials, you know, that was the big decision. And so outside of the correlated materials, member or non-member didn't really make a difference to me going in. But that may not be common.
No, I hear you, Jake. I didn't do Mormon Stories until after I did Bushman, and it was like Bushman, then Palmer, then Mormon Stories. Like, for as light and fluffy as Mormon Stories is, it's still like non-correlated, slightly fringy, even if it's like with a smiley guy, you know, it's still not quite church sources. So
Jake, when did you go through like a desensitization phase where it started with Mormon Stories and then went on to other things that you couldn't quite stomach at that point? You know,
what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah. Right. I mean, it's a tale as old as time. Just kidding. It's just something, a story I've heard many times, but it's, you know, the Mormon Stories, and then Mormon Expression is a little too edgy, but then, you know, then you start listening to it a little bit more and then that type of thing. So yeah, there was I would say like a spectrum of edginess or how sharp the criticism was, and I would say that Mormon Stories was on my very introductory end of that spectrum, and now I'm just doing the equivalent of heroin of that. I'm just shooting up.
So now I'm really like, this is more of a personal question then, because were you listening to Mormon Stories before we met, before I was your home teacher?
Sounds like I think I'd listened to like one episode or something, but not very much. I mean, because it was through you that we actually joined that Mormon Stories group.
Right, right.
Right? So I don't think I was very much. I mean, Glenn was a big part of my disaffection, I have to say.
Right. So was it difficult for you and Erica to have certain conversations with me? Like, would that grate on you as much as, like, listening to Mormon Expression would?
No. Because it just, I don't know, since it was personal, it didn't feel as, and plus you filtered a lot. I mean, even when we had like face-to-face conversations and then like email exchanges about DNC 132. Uh-huh. I remember that was one conversation I really remember.
Yeah.
And it was, and I was making this ridiculous argument that like everything up to when Joseph Smith goes crazy and starts doing the angel with the sword, everything up to that point was legit. But like, but I was totally fine just being like, oh, everything after verse 32 is just bullshit.
Yeah.
So, but like having that conversation and having and you know, you kind of picking that apart and deconstructing it. I mean, that didn't feel. I mean, that was more impactful probably than like any given Mormon Stories or Mormon Expression episode, but it didn't feel as edgy as like a Mormon Expression just because it was somebody I knew and that type of thing.
Okay, so going back to the disciplinary court, I think, Glenn, what you did to Jake and Erica, I think that could be a form of evidence to your apostasy Church of Inner Court.
I've done it to more than Jake and Erica, I'm happy to say.
But you're happy.
You care.
To say.
I am. And you're sincere. I am. You care.
Really? So, who else?
Does not want this known. So I'm telling you guys, but I'm not going to leave it in.
Well, and that's the point. Is it how many people? I mean, if I influence just my wife, isn't that enough? My wife's out because of me.
The worth of a soul is great.
Yeah, it can be enough. I mean, originally, I think it was Lamborn, because he was having meetings at his house and he was inviting people over, that was kind of the crux of the matter, where they're like, oh, see, you actually were preaching apostasy.
Yeah, and I was doing it as a home teacher. As an assigned home teacher to Jake and Erica.
you were a double agent, wolf in sheep's clothing.
That's bad.
Yeah, but they knew, they knew.
So the ownership's on them. Yeah.
Can I read something else out of the handbook here? This is from page 67. This goes to the issue of whether or not it's local leaders doing this or not. First, this is under the section on discipline, page 67 of the handbook. First presidency authority. The first presidency has ultimate authority over all church discipline. Decisions of the first presidency take precedence despite any rules or procedures to the contrary.
It's the Trump card. Yeah, they hold Trump.
So if they called the stake president and said, hey, you're going to hold this court, you're going to excommunicate this person and do it all on a local level and you didn't hear it from us.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they would have to do.
Yeah, they have their hands tied, and they're like, sorry, Brother Ocelyn, you're done.
And I'd say,
probably,
you know,
what the letter says.
I've really been done, like, for 3 years or more. But it's like, I think because I went through a distinct phase when I realized that my ecclesiastical leaders didn't really have any authority over me. And it was so freeing. And like, I didn't feel angry or anything about it, but it just like, I wasn't afraid anymore, you know? So that's why I think I could sit through a disciplinary council and not feel ganged up on, you know, like I wouldn't feel anything about it. I'd just be really curious to observe what's going on and to see that.
I hear you. You know? At this stage, I'd be the same. I'd want to participate. Just because it's
like, so, I wouldn't be angry. It's so meaningless. Yeah.
It's just like, wow, they really think this is real.
Right.
Wow.
And part of me thought about that is if I do attend, is that me submitting or acknowledging that they have authority over me? And it really doesn't, because it would be just that. It'd be an anthropological kind of approach of, this is fascinating. This is interesting the way you all approach this. I'm so over it, but why not go through it?
Yeah.
But I don't know. But it would be interesting to go through it just to observe it. But like the idea that this organization claims to hold people's salvation in their hands, has like a specific process for formally cutting people off that profess to believe things that they don't think that they should believe and still claim to be a Mormon. Like, that's just such an insidious idea. I mean, isn't like, it's well, really, it is. Freaks me out.
But Game of Thrones. I don't think of it.
These are saving ordinances, Jake.
That's the point. I mean, that makes it even more awful.
I would approach it not like Game of Thrones, but like as the court of the wicked King Noah, where I'm Abinadi, and one of those 12 is Alma. And he's gonna hear what I'm saying, and he's gonna think about it.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's why yours is gonna turn into the scene of Jerry Maguire. Who's coming with me? Who's coming with me? You?
Yeah. But that's, you know what? Right. I'm gonna push back a little bit against you guys, because I don't think that the process of excommunicating someone itself, like the fact that they're claiming the authority to do that and that they have a procedure to do that, I don't think that's insidious. I think what's disgraceful here is what they're kicking people out for, the fact that they're not being honest with their history, the fact that they're not engaging in a, you know, it's 2014 and they're not willing to engage in a dialogue about women's role in the church. I think that's what's embarrassing. But they're a private organization. They can kick out whoever they want.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But back to Jake's point, it is kind of insidious, because it's like thought crimes. You know, if a person, they go up in front of these guys and they...
But that's what religion. But religion is thought crime. Like religion is saying that you have one set of thoughts, and if you don't, that's not the religion. Isn't that all? Isn't that what every religion thinks?
It is, but I guess my mind's been unplugged for a while now, and I look at it as just a very horrible thing.
But Tom, did we reverse roles on the liberals, on the damn liberals thing here?
No, I'm the same. Just ask Glenn.
Yeah,
he did the greatest impression of Tom ever.
I think I'm on top now.
But again, the church covered that, and they said you can think what you want
inside your head.
You can't act on it or affect other people,
which is like the worst. Like if you want to become a Buddhist and go into the mountains and then just meditate for the, you know, for however many years you have left on this earth, then great.
Shut your face.
don't act or say, I'm sorry if you're married and you have kids, but just keep your mouth shut, okay?
Okay.
Hi, this is Brian Kissel from Salt Lake City, Utah. I'm one of those liberal Mormons that the infants totally threw under the bus a little while back. You remember that episode, right? Good thing we have forgiveness. You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com. And if you really like what you hear, give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. I did. Okay, well, I actually haven't yet, but I'm going to go do it right now. So you should also come and do it right now. Anyone for the closing prayer?
Hey, I had a thought. Back to the question of whether or not people in this church court are, you know, deliberately doing something insidious versus like sincerely having their heart beat fast in their chest and crying like Tom illustrated and stuff. I'm thinking that I'm just thinking out loud here. Those things aren't mutually exclusive, because if you're going to go through a church court as an active member on the good side, right, and you're assigned one side or the other. Isn't the more spiritual experience to wrestle with a bad situation? Like, if time after time people are just walking scot-free, then you don't have like stories to tell. That's not they don't send the guys, they don't line up the guys for you to judge if there's nothing to judge, or if there's a high probability that they're going to walk away. So isn't it kind of like, by definition, people want that experience, and just like the default is to play right into the church's coordinated hands of the church discipline, court of love, being so loving that it's so bad because it's just fueling that experience even more?
I don't know what you just said. I have no freaking idea.
Bob just went meta five.
Yeah.
Oh man. I don't think I can redo that one.
Can we just be done?
Yeah. I think we beat it to death.
Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.